Hashkofeshir for Parshas Lech Lecha. You'll remember that there was a famine in the land. Vayhira of Ba'aretz. This is Bereishis Yud Beis Pasuk Yud. Vayered Avram Mitzrayim Alo Gershom Ki Kaved Hara of Ba'aretz. Avram goes down to Mitzrayim. That's not always a good idea to go to Mitzrayim. In fact, there's no coincidence here in the fact that Avram goes down to Mitzrayim and ultimately all the Shvatim and all of Klal Yisrael are going to go down to Mitzrayim. This comes under the famous principle of the Ramban, makes such a big deal about it, called Maisa Avos, Sima Laban. Whatever happens to the father is going to happen to the descendants. And then what happens? Avram realizes that because of the fact that his wife is so beautiful, the Mitzrayim are going to take her away. They're going to think, I'm your husband, which I am. But based on that assumption, they're going to put me to death. They don't want to have trouble from a husband. They just want to get to his wife. And therefore, Imri Na, this is Pasuk Yud Gimel Achosi At. And Leman Yitav Li Bavurech V'chayson Nafshi Beglolech. So he requests Avram from his wife, Sarai, to say that she is not his wife, but rather his sister. Okay, then? And there was a classical joke when as a Rebbe in a yeshiva, I would meet a guy with a girl, I would say to him, oh, is that your sister? Right? You know, that was the classical line. Imri na achosi at. Like, who are you fooling? You know? But you should know, they didn't say that to me, they said, this is my cousin. But you can marry your cousin too. Okay, fine. In any event, now the entire story unfolds, and the Pasuk Tezayin is the Pasuk that we want to focus our attention on. It says, Uli Avram Heitiv Heitiv Bavura Vayehi Lo Tson Uvakar Vachamorim Vavodim Ushvachos Vasonos Ugmal. Okay, then, so Sarai complies and plays along with Avram this game, and she presents Avram as her brother. Therefore, Avram is no longer a threat to the Malchus, right, to the Melech Mitzrayim. And in fact, Avram Avinu, as we saw at the end of Pasuk Yud Gimel, Leman Yitav Li Bavurech, Avram Avinu gets this yitavli, he gets this heitev, right? So the word heitev in Pasuk Tezayin, no doubt, parallels or should be connected with the word leman yitav, yitavli in Pasuk Yud Gimel, correct? Everybody agree with me on that? Any objections at this point?
No. So okay. Rashi says over here.
Oh, one second, Rabbi. If you can, hold on to the Rashi, I'll tell you why. Okay. Because I think Rashi ruins it for us. What do I mean? Well, obviously, I'm not a Bar Plunta of Rashi. You can't learn Chumash without Rashi. There's no such thing. Tanakh maybe, but not Chumash. Shas, not even a chance you can learn Shas without Rashi. But in this case, as the one exception to the rule, what I'd like to do is learn the Pasuk Dafka without Rashi. And this is not just a pedagogic game, but I really honestly believe that Rashi is going to throw us off the track. He's going to derail us here from what I call the simple pshat. Again, obviously, we're going to have to try to answer Rashi because Rashi's principle is he's dedicated to pshuto shel mikra. But in this case, that becomes problematic because I don't see that Rashi's pshat is pshuto shel mikra. So if you haven't seen the Rashi yet, then I would beg you not to look at Rashi. Because if you read the Rashi, you'll be prejudiced. And I would like to give you what I think is an unbiased analysis of the words of the Psukim, you know, the language and the grammar and the structure of the verses without Rashi. Okay. Now, if you look again at the words in Tezayin Li Avraham Heitiv Ba'avura, so we want to analyze the grammatical form of the word heitiv. What I mean to say is the following. In grammar, we have what's called an active verb, And if I talk about an action, then what's the first thing in any sentence that has an action? What's the first thing logically I need? I need a subject, right? The subject, and then I need the object. In other words, so there's, you know, Reuven pays money to Shimon. So the payment is the action. Reuven is the active persona, and Shimon is on the receiving end. That's called an active verb. So that would be Reuven hativ l'Shimon, which means that Reuven gave gifts to Shimon. You follow?
Yeah.
But there's another way in which Hebrew grammar works, and that's called a passive recipient, where there's no action that's focused on or mentioned in the verse, but rather I speak about the recipient who received goodness. And if I deliberately choose to emphasize the recipient, the receiving end, what have I de-emphasized? What have I omitted?
The perpetrator,
the active element. Now, when you read this pasuk, is Paro mentioned here in Pasuk Tezayin? It doesn't say Uparo hativ le Avram ba'avura because of Sarai, but rather it says la Avraham hativ. It's almost like the pasuk is describing a reality rather than describing the action that took place. Right, we always differentiate between an action and the result of the action. The difference being that if I testify about something, I don't tell you what's the upshot of this. I just tell you what I saw. You know, I just report that so and so was the active agent who did such and such for the recipient. Here, instead of testifying about the action, the Torah seems to be putting the emphasis on the result of the action, that Avram becomes wealthy. Now, if I were to ask you, this is a Chumash / Hashkafa class, right? So from a Hashkafic point of view, what would be some sort of an ethical, perhaps, reason or explanation as to why the Torah de-emphasizes the action, but rather emphasizes the result of the action?
I'm not following your question. Are you actually now implying that it was not Paro that made Avram a gift? Is that what you're...
Well, I'm not sure. I think if you answer this question, then we'll have an answer to your question, Michael. What do you say, George?
I think that Michael is getting
to the point. And the point is not that Paro is totally out of the picture. No one's going to deny what Rashi says over here. We'll see the Rashi in a minute, that these Gmalim and Chamorim, what's the whole list over here? Tzon, Ubok, and Shvachos, comes from who? All of this come from Paro. No one's denying that. But yet, what I'm trying to push for, this is my agenda. You okay there? Okay, there's going to be any lawyers here that can defend, that can protect the ELC in court over here. My point is that it seems to me that the Torah surprises us here and substitutes a different form, a different grammatical expression of what went on over here for some sort of deliberate reason. The Torah is always deliberate, right? The Torah is always well thought out. And instead of telling me that Paro was Mativ Avram, the Torah wants to leave out Paro. Not to mislead us into thinking that the Gmalim flew down from the heavens. Nobody's saying that. But on an ethical level, perhaps the point is what? George, what do you...
That it's not simply Paro.
Yeah, who else is in the picture besides Paro?
The Egyptians.
Well, no, I'm saying in terms of making Avram a rich guy, right? We go back to the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, right? And what is Hashem's promise Avram? And again, the Torah doesn't reveal why Hashem promised this Avram, but it says, "Va'gadlo shmecha v'yei bracha." That's in Pasuk Beis. And you'll see that Rashi says, "Hivticha al mamon." Again, there are other parts of that talk, but the one that I'm focused on today, which Rashi emphasizes, is mamon. God says that I am going to see to it that you get rich. Who is the one, besides Paro, that we discussed on Sunday, who tried to get Paro rich, get Avram rich, and take all the credit? That was Melech Sdom. And there also, you remember that Avram went out of his way, lafuke, to exclude that it's not you, the king of Sdom, that's going to make me rich. Here, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making Avram rich through the medium or the agency of whom? Of Paro, but yet let's not put Paro too far up in the picture. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says in Pasuk Tezayin, which if you have the blue Chumashim, it's on the left column, the first line, and he says, Paro Bavura, meaning Rashi is sensitive to the grammatical issue. He realizes full well that there's a word missing in this Pasuk. The Torah has omitted the active persona. So Rashi's going to tell you, let me fill in that information for you. But once I read this Rashi, I begin to get the impression that the Pasuk really says that Paro hativ li'avram bavura, as if the emphasis is on Paro. So what I'd like to suggest is that although Rashi is giving us pshat, and we certainly have to know that the riches came through Paro, but the emphasis is not on Paro. The Torah is deliberately de-emphasizing Paro, and by process of elimination, who, with a capital W, becomes the active agent here? It's the Ribbono Shel Olam.
But that's with everything. I mean, even if he would have said Paro, it would have been an Hashem made Paro given the riches.
Oh, so why is it, Tom? I think this is your question. Yeah. That the Torah wants to go out of its way to de-emphasize Paro in this particular context. In other words, what we want to do is we want to use this specific point to shed a light on the entire parsha. What is the subject of this entire parsha? What is the theme? Like if I were giving it a title in a book, or it's a title of a chapter in a book, what would be the title of this chapter? And what I'd like to suggest is the word Ba'avura. Ba'avura is a reference to whom?
Sarah.
This chapter, I believe, is all about Sarah. And that's a pretty revolutionary approach, because when you read the parasha, Sarah doesn't play much of an active role in this parasha. On the contrary, you know, the main persona who get most of the bylines in this play on Broadway, this Broadway play, are Avram and Paro and the Avdei Paro. Sarah seems to be lurking in the background.
You're just talking about this perek or the whole parasha of Levi.
Well, I would say from Yud to Chav, meaning. Do you follow what I mean? Meaning the
just this.
Right. Because keep in mind, these 10 psukim, you know, the Jewish people did not break up the Chumash into chapters. You know, that we got from a different source. But if you take a look right before Pasuk Yud, you'll have a pay. And then, Chaf is the last Pasuk in this parak. So what I'm suggesting is that there's an entity here, a unit, which sort of conceals the main person in the play. You know, who's got the main role? You know, who's this all about? And I'm suggesting it's Sarai. And we're going to put A plus B together. A is that Paro is pushed to the sidelines, and the Torah deliberately does that by saying Ulavram Heitiv, as if all this riches fell from heaven, leave Paro out of the picture. And that's number one. Why is the Torah Dafka in this context, in this parasha, pushing Paro out of the picture? And number two, how could we possibly substantiate Rabbi Berzon's claim that seems to be so off base that it is Sarai who's playing the major role and the Ba'avura over here is so critical? Now, before we go on, I want to mention the name of somebody. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was a great rabbi. His name was Chalbo. Did you ever hear of him? For those who are into, let's say, Daf Yomi, you'll probably have heard of Rabbi Chalbo. Rabbi Chalbo is one of the Amoraim, and he wants to derive from this parsha an unbelievable statement. And we'll see it inside in just a minute. Rabbi Chalbo wants to derive that if a person wants to get rich, the best way of doing it is, I'm trying to slow down so that you use your mind, what would be your recommendation to get rich? Do we have any rich people in the audience who can tell us? Well, no one's coming forward, so I guess I'll have to volunteer.
Marry a wealthy woman.
Oh, marry a wealthy woman. Okay, very good. Now, in this case, it's not going to help me because Sarai was poor as a church mouse. But I would have said, invest your money wisely. you know, like they say, for example, in England now, it's a good time to invest. You know, everything's about to go up again. It went down and it's going to go up. Is that true or not true? I'm not a Navi and I'm certainly not a financial expert, so I can't tell you. But Rabbi Chalbo says, listen carefully, that the key to success in business, if you want to get wealthy, is to respect your wife. And he derives it from this parasha. This parasha is going to be about, according to Rabbi Chalbo, the respect a person has, the admiration a person has to have for his wife. And I was always wondering, what would Rabbi Chalbo tell me if I had two wives? Right? The Torah allows me to marry more than one wife. But I always say one wife is more than enough, and if you can survive one wife, that's great, you know? That's not politically correct, especially we don't know who the next president of the United States is going to be, right? But in any event, so now we have a statement of Rabbi Chalbo. So without further ado, if you could open up the pages I gave you, and those who enjoy following a text inside, we'll take a look at the second paragraph on page 55. And this is an essay from my favorite sefer on Chumash this year. Every year I pick a favorite sefer, and that's called Heima Yenachamuni from the Tolna Rebbe. And he quotes a Gemara in Bava Metzia. So for those who are learning the daf, we're going to get to this in a few weeks, so you might as well get a preview of coming attractions. And if we're lucky, we're going to see a Gemara Bava Metzia from today's daf as well. Fine. So Amar Rabbi Chalbo. Rabbi Chalbo says the following: Li olam yehe adam zahir b'chvod ishto. A person should always be very careful about the respect for his wife. She'ein bracha mitzuya b'tof beso shel adam. The word bracha here in this context means the increase of his possessions. That's called a bracha. And you'll see this in today's daf in Bava Metzia, that the Gemara is going to tell you in Perek HaMafkid. How does a person guarantee, let's say he has a granary, it's called a goren in the Lashon of Shas, and he wants to make sure that the produce or the grains in that granary will increase. Do you remember this, Doc? Remember, there's a special tefillah that you should recite when you're about to measure your grains, your produce. Michael, you're also learning the daf, right? Remember the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak? Correct. It's got to be before he measures it. If he asks Hashem to increase his produce after he's already measured it, it's what's called a tefillah shav. It's meaningless. But before he measures it out, God could change the actual substance, the measurement of what's inside his silo. It's a mind-boggling concept to ask Hashem for a miracle, to bestow his blessing upon my produce and increase it. That's called a bracha. Says Rabbi Chalbo, how does a person guarantee a bracha on everything that he has in his house? He has to what? He has to be zahir. What does zahir mean? To be careful, b'chvod ishto. And what's the source for this, Rabbi Chalbo? Says Rabbi Chalbo, Shenemar ula Avraham heitiv ba'avura. Look at how Rabbi Chalbo interprets these three words that seem so innocuous, and he's going to derive a radical chiddush from these three, and a very important practical chiddush. So like if a person is a little bit upset with his wife for whatever reason, you know, he thinks she annoyed her, of course she thinks he annoyed her, but whichever way it is, so he should take a deep breath and think, wait a minute, I want to get rich. So instead of lashing out at my wife, I should hold my tongue and give her respect and honor, because Rabbi Chalbo promises me, Leman Yitav Bavurech. And here I think again we're going to get a clue as to why the Torah conceals the name of Paro. Because again, Rabbi Chalbo is not saying that Paro is going to bestow upon you riches because you were very careful about the respect for your wife. But who's going to bestow upon you riches? The bracha comes from Hashem. So Laman Yitavli means that the Hatova here is not coming from Paro. Paro may be the physical agent, but it's really coming from Hashem. And why? Because of Bavurech. Because of the kavod that a husband has for his father.
Why?
Okay, why? What is the connection here? What did I say? I meant to say a kavod person has for his wife. Sorry. What is the connection here between the two? And Rava, when he heard Rabbi Chalva's drasha, Rabbi Chalva turned to the B'nai Mechuza, you know, to his flock in a city called Mechuza, and he said, O Kiru l'Neshaychu, give honor and kavod to your wives. Why? Ki hechi de tisasru. Tisasru means tisashru, so that you will become wealthy. So the Maram Shif raises the question. He says, I don't understand Rabbi Chalva. How could it be that because Paro bestowed gifts upon Sarai, that's a proof that because of a person's chus, when he gives respect to his wife, therefore he become rich? Paro was of the opinion that Sarah was under the mistaken impression that Sarah was the sister of Avraham. So it wasn't that these gifts were being bestowed upon Avraham as a husband to Sarai, but rather as a brother to Sarai. And not only that, why is Rabbi Chalva isolating and singling out the kavod that a person gives to his wife? Why is that a key to the shefa, to bringing back down the benevolence of Hashem, the benevolence of Hashem from Shemayim? How do we see in this story of Avram and Paro and Sarai the kavod that Avram gave to his wife, and how does Rabbi Chalva know that Avram was merited getting all these wonderful financial gifts because he was mechaber his wife? The Marsha, you know, is the super commentary on Agadita, and there in Masechta Bava Metzia Nuntes, he says the following. The Torah doesn't mention Paro, that he gave the matonos. Rashi says that it was Paro who gave the matonos. Paro hated Avram. But yet the Torah conceals Paro's name and omits it. Says the Marsha, that's why Rabbi Chalva derived from this pasuk that we're not talking about Paro here. Paro is only an agent. He's a pawn on the chessboard. But we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avram hated. It was great for Avram on the receiving end. And who gave the gifts to Avram? It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always left out, concealed, in order for us to work hard in understanding the Chumash and discovering that behind the physical and biological world that's being presented, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's calling the shots. We're only puppets. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meitiv to Avram. And why? Why does Avram get this great gift, this endowment of blessing from God? Because Ba'avura, because of Sarah. And what's the Ba'avura? The answer is because Avram always has a tremendous amount of kavod for his wife's son. And I believe that based on this Marsha, we really should read all the parashios from Lech Lecha until Chayisar, the death of Sarah, and really analyze in great depth the relationship between Avram and Sarah, and how much Avram respected Sarah. And that's a research project that we'll have to leave for another time, but I think it's a very important project. Now the question arises, why this parasha, Tom, what you were asking before? Of all places in the Chumash, you know, that the Torah wants to teach us this message about how a husband has to respect his wife and how much benefit he'll get from that respect, why does the Torah choose to locate that message right here in the context of this episode? In truth, according to the Marsha, there's a general bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avram, and there's no reason why, ostensibly in this context of Paro, Hashem should bestow these gifts upon Avram ba'avura as a result of the kavod that he gives to his wife. And here we turn to page 56. On page 56, he points out that if we go back to the Chumash again on page 27, you'll see it right after it says Lavram etiv bavura in Pasuk Tezayin, it says Vayehi lo. Vayehi lo. It doesn't say Vayite lo. Again, leaving out Paro, the active agent here who gave Avram, but rather Vayehi lo, which literally translates as he had. What does it mean, he had? he had the rechush. Not that Paro gave him the rechush and he received it, but rather vayihilo. It's as if Avram had this rechush with or without Paro. Paro, as we said, is playing a secondary role. He's a pawn over here. But more important is that, you know, we have two Targumim on the Torah. One is called Targum Unkelus, the other is called Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel. And in Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, he says that what does it mean, Vayehi Lo? How does he translate Vayehi Lo? Vahavu Lo, and look at the next word, Midilei. Midilei means this was the rechush that Avram had on his own. Midilei from himself. Meaning, it wasn't that Avram got this hatova as we would think, and Rashi sort of gives us that impression too from Paro, because the Torah is not interested in telling us that Paro made Avram wealthy, but rather it's Midilei. Midilei means on his own merit, Avram deserves these gifts. And therefore Rabbi Chalbo says, why did Avram Avinu on his own merit deserve these gifts? And the answer is because Avram was mechabed es ishto, and therefore he gets this bracha from Hashem. And now, in order to appreciate why it's dafka the zchus of the honor that Avram gave to his wife Sarai, that Avram receives this bracha from Hashem, we're going to study another statement of the same Rabbi Chalbo, but this time in Masechta Moed Katan. So if you'll fast forward for a moment.
But early in the piece, Hashem promised Avraham to give him wealth. So therefore he got the wealth, he was mechabed the wealth, not because of Sarah, but because that's what Hashem promised him.
But the reason why Hashem promised it to him is because of his covenant. And how do we see that, says Rabbi Chalbo? We see it in this context of the episode between Paro and Avram, when the Torah says, Yitav li, Mishali, Midilei, the way Targum Yonasan learns it, Ba'avura. Ba'avura means because of Avram's chus and the way he treated Sarah. So if you ask me the question, why does Hashem promise Avram all this wealth and bracha? We don't know. When we start Perek, Yudbeis of Parshas Bereishis, the Torah doesn't give us a clue as to why Avram Avinu deserves and what merit. You might think it's because he jumped into the, or allowed himself to be cast into the Kibshon HaEsh, but keep in mind at the end of Parshas Noach there's no mention of the Kibshon HaEsh either. So the Torah has deliberately omitted that. And therefore, Rabbi Chalbo looks high and low. Show me some sort of remez, some sort of pasuk that might give me an illusion, a clue, as to why Avraham Avinu deserves all this wealth that God bestows upon him. And the answer is because of this parasha, this episode of Avram and Sarai, where he has such covet for Sarah that Rabbi Chalbo says a person who has covet for his wife has the merit, the schus, of deserving all this wealth. It's dafka in this parasha that the Torah reveals why HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows all this wealth. The schar and the bracha is because of Avram's zchus in being mechabed his wife.
Where's the kufa that he showed Sarah? He says, let me be your brother. Says,
that's what this article is all about, Tom.
Ah, okay.
So you have to be patient. You know what I'm saying? That's the argument. So again, we're asking two questions here. Now, question number one is, why did the Torah deliberately omit Paro? And that question I think we've partially answered. That, as Rabbi Chalbo says, the emphasis here is not on Paro bestowing the bracha, but rather on Hashem bestowing the bracha. And question number two, says Rabbi Chalbo, why does Hashem bestow this bracha on Avram Avinu? And the answer, says Rabbi Chalbo, is because of the covenant that Avram gives to his wife. A, why is that so essential? Why does that become such a merit that it generates the suitability of Avram and the worthiness of Avram to receive these great brachas? And number two, why does the Torah wait to this particular episode, Dafka, to reveal this secret? So in order to answer these questions, we're going to take a look at another statement of Rabbi Chalbo in the Gemara in Masechta Moed Katan that at the face of it has nothing whatsoever to do with our discussion today. We are now going to learn the laws of Avelus for a Sefer Torah that's burnt. The law is that if Chas V'Shalom a Sefer Torah gets burnt, then we have to have what's called Kriya. Kriya with an ayin means to rip our garments as a result of this great tragedy of having witnessed the burning of a Sefer Torah. if you know the kinas that we recite on Tisha B'Av, especially those that deal with the Crusades, focus on the public burning of Torah. Do you remember that? There's something called Mi Yitein Rosh Mayim, that if my head was full of water, it would not incessantly would not stop crying because I witnessed the burning of the Sefer Torah. In fact, even if someone witnesses the falling of a Sefer Torah, there's a certain element of Avelus, which is called Tainus, but the full-fledged Avelus of Kriya, of rendering one's garments, is if he saw the Sefer Torah burnt. Now, if Chas V'Shalom, anybody saw a Sefer Torah burnt, how many times would he cut Kriya? What would be your knee-jerk response to that question? Again, there was only one Sefer Torah that was burnt, so how many times should he cut Kriya? Only once. Comes along Rabbi Chalba with a Chiddush, and he says that if a person sees the burning of a Sefer Torah, he has to cut two different Kriyas. Again, Moikatan is the Masechta for the laws of Avelus, as you know. That's why they say in yeshivas they don't learn Moikatan, I was told, because they don't want to get the young people involved in Avelus, and maybe it's a bad omen. All that, I think, in my humble opinion, is total hogwash. That's absolute rubbish. And Moikatan is no less of a significant Masechta. My Rebbe used to say Shiurim on the deepest level, analyzing the laws of Avelus in Moikatan. There was one year where he dedicated the entire year just to study the laws of Avelus in Washington Heights in New York City. Omar Rabbi Chalbo, it's the third paragraph, the third major paragraph, it's the fourth paragraph, sorry. The fourth paragraph on page 56. Omar Rabbi Chalbo. Haroa Sefer Torah Shenikra, in this case it wasn't burnt, but it was ripped to shreds. Chayav Likroa Shtei Kriya. So he has to be Korea twice. Echad, one Kriya Al Hagvil, for the destruction of the cloth itself, the gvil, that's the parchment, the echad al ksav, and another kriya for the letters and the ink that make up the letters of the Sefer Torah. There's a double avelus over here. Number one, we have a grief over the ksav, the writing, and number two, we have an equal amount of grief and mourning over the loss of the cloth. There's a double tragedy here. Number one, the tragedy of the loss of the ksav. And number two, the tragedy over the loss of the cloth. Now, Rabosai, if I were to ask you, where is the essence of the Sefer Torah? And where and why am I grieving and cutting kriya over the loss of the Sefer Torah? I'm going to give you two choices so that you'll definitely get the right answer. Not definitely, but hopefully. And that's the ksav or the cloth. What would be your answer? And what I'm doing is I'm giving you a preview of the next paragraph, which takes us all the way to page 57.
The writing.
The writing itself. Because that's the essence of the Sefer Torah. All the messages, all the learning and the content, substance of the Torah is in the ksav.
They even wrote it on the rocks.
Correct.
Write it anyway.
Correct. Bar-Aiden. So if I were to ask you, what role does the cloth play? Primary or secondary, what would be your answer? The cloth is secondary. Now, in the language of Shas, that's called a machshir or a hechsher. Very difficult for me to translate that into English. A hechsher is literally a facilitator, meaning sometimes I can't do something on my own, I can't accomplish a goal on my own, left independently. I need someone to help me to facilitate. Without the cloth, there's no possibility of the ksav. But in a certain sense, the cloth, the gvil, loses its significance to the ksav because it's only a heksher. It was only there to set something up. Like, for example, the Gemara says in Masechta Makis that if you cut down trees in order to build a sukkah, the act of cutting down the trees is just a heksher. There's no inherent significance in wood chopping. The significance is in building the sukkah. And therefore the Gemara thinks that if an axe, part of the axe flies out while he's cutting down trees and kills someone, then he should go into golus because he's not actually involved in a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah significance in cutting down trees. That is only an act of a heksher. It's only a precondition or a preparatory step. It's a preliminary step. It has no inherent significance. It's a heksher. And therefore, we're left with the following question. Why does Rabbi Chalbo believe that we have an equal level of avelus for the gvil as we have for the loss of the ksav? The gvil, after all, is only a heksher. And it turns out that Rabbi Chalbo has a tremendous chidush when he says that you have an independent obligation of kriya for the loss of the gvil. And the answer is that once this gvil serves and functions to set up the ksav, the gvil gets its own independent status. It is sanctified independently with the kedusha of the Sefer Torah. Again, if you have a gvil with no writing on it, obviously it doesn't have kedusha Sefer Torah. But once the ksav is added to the gvil, at this point the gvil emerges as a chefta shel kedusha Sefer Torah. Ha'hesber bazeh, if you take a look at the bottom of page 56, two lines, three lines up. Anu mitzuvim l'kra b'nifrad. B'nifrad means independently, ala klaf, on the loss of the parchment. Why? Sha'la klaf yesh chashivut u'kdusha shel sefer Torah. That the klaf itself has the sanctity of a sefer Torah. And why is that? So if you take a look at the end of this paragraph, which is on the page 57, he says, from a superficial first glance perspective, we would think that the klaf is only a machshir, if you can underline that word machshir. For example, when a scribe writes the Sefer Torah, he holds in his hand a quill, I think it's called. Is that right? The quill? In Hebrew it's called, not in Hebrew actually, it's a Greek word, but in the Talmud it's called a kulmus. And the kulmus has no sanctity of a Sefer Torah. Why does the klaf have any sanctity? Just like the scribe needs the quill in order to write the Sefer Torah, he needs a gvil to write the osios on top of the gvil. And therefore the klaf, l'chora, at first glance, is nothing more than a hechet tibza. It's a facilitator, it's a means to an end to write the osios, which have inherent kedusha. In fact, you know, when they burnt Reb Chanina ben Trajon at the stake in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Ches, it was the Gvil Nisrafim. That wasn't his issue. He wasn't focused on the parchment going up in smoke, but it was the Osios that he was concerned about. Ha Osios Parchos Biavir. These Osios no longer have a home. They're in a sense, you know, flying through the universe. And the question is what he meant by that. And Bar Rabbi Chilbo Machade Shalokach, on the fourth line, Rabbi Chalbo comes Lafuki to exclude this. He says, once we write the ksav on top of the klaf is now transformed into a new entity on a halakhic level. It becomes an equal partner in its sanctity with the ksav itself. And therefore the kedusha is no greater to the ksav than it is to the gvil. They both have the same identical level of kedusha, and therefore as a result the klaf itself, if it's destroyed, generates an obligation of grief and mourning no less than the destruction of the osios. So again, it's not just that the osios can't exist without the klaf, and the klaf is just there to make it possible to write the books. But now the klaf becomes a shutaf, a full-fledged partner, an active partner in this kedusha, this sanctity of the Sefer Torah. And he suggests the following. There are two types of partners. I don't know if anyone here was ever in a partnership agreement. In some partnership agreements, it's not always that way. Say it again?
Sleeping.
Oh, it's called the sleeping partner. And what's the other one? I call it the active partner, but I don't know what word you use. I don't know the technical term. But very often in a partnership agreement, let's say the two of us are from, you and I go into partnership, I know that you're better at the day-to-day shakla v'tari, you know, the buying and the selling than I am. You have more expertise. I play, in a sense, a passive role. I'm behind the scenes. I'm an equal partner to you. And you play the active role. You're out there in the front line. And he says, in a certain sense, the Sefer Torah has the active partner, which is the Osios. You know, that indicates the Kedusha Sefer Torah up front, explicitly, because that's what we're learning and that's what we're studying. And then there's the secret kind of silent partner, which is the Klaf. But the silent partner is no less of a partner than the active partner. They're both equal partners. And therefore, and the destruction, chas v'shalom, of this Sefer Torah, we have an avelus for both partners, and each one is a separate, independent kedusha, sanctity unto itself, that generates avelus.
Okay. Is that true about the quail? The thing is, the quail that goes and writes the letters to the Sefer Torah, so the thing is, then that becomes, that it has some kind of
sanctity? No. No, the quill has no sanctity whatsoever.
Even though it's writing all these different words?
Even though it's writing. Because the quill is nothing more than a facilitator. It's nothing more than a heksher. Yes. The cloth itself, though, now becomes part and parcel of the entity called the Sefer Torah. The quill never becomes integrated into the entity of the Sefer Torah. So let's leave that for now, because okay. You know, the clock is our worst enemy, and I want to get to the punchline of this shiur. Now, is there any connection between the two statements of Rabbi Chelbo? The first statement of Rabbi Chelbo we saw from a Gemara in Bava Metzia, that a man who wants to get rich and get the bracha into his house, he should be mechaved his wife. And the second statement of Rabbi Chelbo in Masechet Moed Katan, that one has to cut kriya for the klaf no less than for the ksav. The key lies in a Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin says the following, that the Torah was given li'enei kol Yisrael, right, so that's the end of the Chumash, means it was given to 600,000. That's called in our language shishim ribu. And the Gemara says that if you count the osios of the Torah, you will come up with 600,000. The reason why there are 600,000 osios in the Torah is because one os, each letter of the Torah, corresponds to another Jew, and the Torah was given to 600,000 Jews. Is that familiar to you? That's a Gemara Masechta Kiddushin. The Gemara says that the early scholars were called sofrim. Sofrim means counters, because they were so meticulous about reading the text of the Torah that they would even be able to count the letters of the Torah. Comes along the Pnei Yoshua, one of the great Achronim, and he says, I counted the letters of the Torah. And guess what? I came up with 300,000. That's half the amount. Says the Pnei Yoshua, I don't understand. Chazal tell us, li'enei kol Yisrael, now here you have to allow a little bit of poetic license, a shin, or a sin, really, not a shin, but a sin, like Yisrael, the second letter of Yisrael is a sin, is a substitute, can be replaced by a samach. So whenever you see a sin, which is a shin with the nekuda on the left side, correct? That's a samach. And if you read the word Yisrael, it becomes an otrikun, feyesh shishim ribui osios liyisrael. Right, I'm sorry. Fulet Torah, I meant to say. Did I say Yisrael? Because I got confused, right? He says the following. Yesh shishim ribui osios litorah, correct? If you take a look at the first letter in each word, Yisrael, and you're willing to shift the sin to a samach, then you get yesh shishim osios, shishim ribu, which means 600,000, osios litorah. So it means that Klal Yisrael, as an entity of 600,000, received the Torah, and yet there aren't 600,000 osios in the Torah. So how could it be that Shloshim Ribui, which is just half of Shishim Ribui, is considered the osios of the Torah? It doesn't make any sense. So if you'll take a look in the Shita Mekubetzes, he calls him Aram Galanti, he says an unbelievable chiddush, which is in the next paragraph. He says that Am Yisrael, receiving the Torah, was made up of two groups. One group were the males, and the other were the females. And Hascharim mivutan biosios atzmon viulanikemos biklaf shetachas aksav. This is mind-boggling. Why is Shloshim Ribui doubled to come to Shishim Ribui? Because he says the Torah itself is made up of 600,000. Why? Because every single os has underneath it what? A klaf. And if you count the os and its klaf, you basically take 300,000 and multiply it by 2. And that gives you the number shishim ribui, which is reflective of klal Yisrael made up of males and females. Now, if this be the case, we can begin to appreciate why Rabbi Chelbo understands that you have to cut kriya not just on the destruction of what? The osios, the ksav, but even on the destruction of the klav. Because when we say that there are 600,000 osios that make up the Sefer Torah, we're referring to the 300,000 letters and their respective klav. And the respective klav reflects or alludes to, right, symbolizes the women folk of Klal Yisrael. Now wait a second. The Torah says at the very beginning of Chumash that a woman who's created as what? Ezer Kenegdo. Who can tell me what Ezer Kenegdo means? She's the helpmate of man, right? That's what it says in the Pasuk. I'm just reading you the Pasuk and I'm translating into loose translation to English. She's an Ezer Kenegdo. As if to say that a woman's role and her contribution is to be an Ezer. Who can give me another word for an Ezer, which you'll see on the top of the page? Can you give me another word for an Ezer? More of a Lamdisha, you know, Talmudic term. It's on the top of page 57, just to give you a hint. Because I'm not getting too much. Hechsher. Hechsher. What does Hechsher mean? A facilitator, right? So what's the role of a woman? The Torah says Ezer Kenegdo. So I'm going to tell you that a woman's role is that of facilitator. And if I'm going to tell you that in terms of Sefer Torah, a woman's role is that of, not the ksav, but the klaf, then I'm going to tell you that the klaf is insignificant because it's only a hechsher. Says Rabbi Chalba, you're making a big mistake. You don't understand the deeper meaning of what Ezer Kenegdo is all about. You think that Ezer Kenegdo means that a woman plays a secondary role. A woman is nothing more than a machshir and a facilitator. She's not an equal partner. She's like the klav. Says Rabbi Chalbi, you're right. She is the klav. That's the other 300,000 that makes up the 600,000. But you don't understand the klav. The klav is not a facilitator. The klav is not a machshir. The klav is an equal partner. And the klav has the same identical kedusha sefer Torah as the ksav. And therefore, if the ksav is destroyed, you cut kriya. And if the gvil under the ksav, the klav is destroyed, you cut the same kriya. And you need two kriyas. Because each one, the ksav and the klav, has an independent status as a sanctified entity of Kedusha Sefer Torah, which engenders, in the case of destruction, a kriya, an avelus. And therefore, he says that we can begin to understand now why the two statements of Rabbi Chelbo, one in Masechta Bava Metzia and the other in Masechta Maikatan, really should be integrated into one entity, one whole unit. What the Torah is telling us about Esa Lo Ezer Kenegdo, and he writes here on the bottom of your page 57 that Rabim Toim, a lot of people are mistaken in their interpretation of that pasuk, and they think that a woman is just what we call in modern Hebrew an ozeret bayit. You know what an ozeret bayit is, by the way?
Cleaning lady.
A cleaning lady, right? Give me a nicer word than a cleaning lady.
A maid.
A maid. Oh, that's not so much better.
Housekeeper.
A housekeeper. Okay, fine. That a woman is a housekeeper. And by the way, in a Maimar Muzgar, a man is considered a check writer. You know, it's. But there's more to it than that. Rabbi Chelbo is teaching us that that's not what Ezer Kenegdo means. The real true meaning of Ezer Kenegdo is she is a total, complete shutaf, a shutefet, shutafa, and she's on the equal value as her husband. And here we're going to turn to page 58, which I think you'll see on another page that I gave out. And he writes that the Baal, he might be the active partner in a sense, right? He's out there doing all the business, maybe. I mean, that has changed in our sociology, but nevertheless, the Torah itself says, Ish Darko Lichvosh, right? Who goes out to battle, for example, and battling here means every dimension of life. It's the Ish, and he represents the Ksav. But nevertheless, there's a silent partner here, and that silent partner has no less shares in the partnership than the active partner, and that's the woman. She's back there in the Rekha, you know, she's in the beautiful, splendid background, but you should know that the Baal has no way of fulfilling his role and his contribution in the partnership without this, so to speak, background. Meaning, what the woman contributes here to this partnership is what the klaf contributes to the Sefer Torah. The klaf is not just a handmaid of the osios, but the klaf is a full partnership with the same value. And therefore, if it would have been that the klaf is nothing more than a secondary kind of facilitator, you would not cut kriya, says Rabbi Chalba, on the loss of the klaf. And so too, in chaye yom yom, in our daily lives, we have to write the osios of the Sefer Torah, but we have to write it on the gvil. The gvil is what sets up the Sefer Torah, and together as a partnership, as a teamwork, they now create this beautiful, majestic family, or shall we say family unit, called Ish V'Isha. And again, although she's the silent partner in our mashal, but nevertheless, she has her own independent kedusha. And if I can take just 1 minute of your time before we finish the article and ask you to turn back for a moment to Bereishis Perek Aleph, where the Torah records the story of the creation of man, you will see. Second. On page 7, if you have the blue kumashim, Pasuk of Gimel, the Pasuk says, Vayomer Adam Zosapam Etem Yatsomai Ubasar Vibsari Lizos Yikore Isha Kime Ish Lukacha Zos. At this point in the presentation of the story of the creation of man, here in the second chapter of Bereishis, woman is created from the rib of man. Again, I use the word rib in a certain, loosely, don't take me to task on that, but it does say Vayikach Achas Mitzalos of an Itzela as a rib. And therefore, what's the name that's appropriate for female? It is Isha. Why? Because Isha indicates that she was taken from an Ish. That's fine. So if you ask me, the name represents the essence of a woman. The essence of a woman is that she comes from a man. However, if you fast forward to page 9, which is Perek Gimel of Sefer Bereishis, all of a sudden woman gets another name. And if you look at Pasuk Chav, Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava. Now what is her name? Is her name Isha? Or is her name Chava? My Rebbe wrote an article about Adam the first and Adam the second. I don't know if anyone has ever seen it. It's called The Lonely Man of Faith. I would write a book called The Lonely Woman of Faith. And there's Eve the first and Eve the second. Eve the first has no name, so to speak, of her own. She's Me'ish Lukacha. But Eve the second emerges as a personality unto herself, independent of Adam. And her name here is not Isha, but rather Chava. She represents chius. Chius means life. A woman gives life. She gives birth to life. She cherishes and raises the child. She sacrifices for the child. All this is the special, unique role of the woman. A role which, according to many, I shouldn't say this in front of a professional, but according to many sociologists, a man can't really play that role. He just doesn't have the makeup to raise a child. And again, that's not very contemporary to say that. I know, because today there are no differences between male and a woman, and a man can raise a child just like a woman can, but I don't believe that that's the Torah's Ashkaf. There's something unique in the essence of a woman, that she's endowed with this ability of self-sacrifice, to give herself over for the life of the child. She puts herself, and this pasuk comes right after the pregnancy and birth, in the aftermath of Chet Adam Arishon, right? That she can volunteer to become pregnant, because the Torah never requires her to do so. And pregnancy is very complicated. Birth is even more complicated. And all this because she's the Eim Kol Chai, because Chava represents Chius. That is her unique personality. The Rabbeinu Bachai, in his commentary on the Torah, disagrees with the Ramban, which is very rare. He usually follows in the Ramban's footsteps. The Ramban assumes that the original creation was male and female together, as like Siamese twins, and then God separates the two. That's called in the Lashon HaShas, Yetzira Achas. And Rabbeinu Bachai claims we reject that opinion of Yetzira Achas. Ayin Ksuvah Staff Ches, I think, is the Sugya. We hold Shtei Yetziros, that there was a separate creation for man and a separate creation for woman. And he goes into a long explanation of what the whole story about the Tzela is. But why, says Rabbeinu Chai, do I insist on Shtei Yetziros? Because I want you to know, says Rabbeinu Chai, that there's a separate independent Yetzira of Nekeva, of female. And again, if we go back to finish our article, this is what I think he's trying to derive from Rabbi Chelbo's equation between the klaf that's underneath the os, which doubles the number of 30 ribui to shishim ribui, from 300,000 to 600,000, because that klaf has an independent kedusha, and the klaf represents the isha. The Gemara in the daf that we're doing in Bav Metzia says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak ein abracha metzuya el bedavra somoi min ha'ayin. If you want to get a blessing, it's got to be concealed. It's got to be, if there are two partners, there's the active partner who's out there, who's exposed to the world, but you want to get the bracha, you need for the bracha the secret partner who's behind the scenes. And therefore, you have to make sure that you didn't count and measure your silo, your grains, your produce before you ask for the bracha. The bracha can only be chal when everything is concealed. And that's the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak in Masechta Bav Metzia. And Rabbi Yitzchak derives it from the pasuk Tzav Hashem Itchas Es Bircha Es HaBracha Bi Asmecha. And if you take a look, there are two letters in the word Basmecha, Samach, Samach and Mem. And Rashi says the Samach and the Mem means Samui. Samui means it's concealed. How is this bracha in man's property brought about through the Samui Minayin, the fact that it is the silent partner that's concealed? Im Adam Kotzer Mamalias HaSamu B'Tvua, if a man goes out there and he harvests and gathers together all his produce and places it in a, you know, the bales and so forth in the granary. Harei hichnis kamut misuyamit ma'ot. There's a very specific volume of produce that he brought in. How could he expect a bracha? Ha'im ha'bracha tosiflo? Can add kilogramim, he says, which means, you know, bushels or some sort of volume to the produce that he's already collected? How is it possible? But the answer is, there are people who go out there and they work very hard 24/7 in their asakim. They don't necessarily see a blessing. I'll call revach, when they have income and profits from this, they get a hefseid from that. Do you ever have that experience? I don't want to talk about myself, but I've had this experience so much. You know, all of a sudden the IRS gives you a return on your money. That's rare. And you're dancing in the streets. You know, you get, and then you find out the next day that you need a renovation for your house, which is going to cost you more than what the IRS gave you. You know, so what did you gain? Hakesev mitpazer mibein ha'etzpaot. The money falls between his fingers. There are other people who have great wealth and great success in their nechassim, but they don't succeed in other things. They may be rich and wealthy, but they don't raise their children well. They don't necessarily have harmony in their family. And therefore, in the next to last paragraph, he says, according to the derech that we presented, Chazal defined an isha, according to Rabbi Chalbo, as a shutafas muyalavala. She's the secret partner of her husband. And therefore we could begin to understand that the bracha is going to come through the silent partner who is concealed, who is behind the scenes. Dovra somi min ayin. That's what's going to bring the bracha. So Rabbi Chelbo says that it's the Isha who brings the bracha into the house. She's going to be, on the one hand, the facilitator, but on the other hand, she herself has her own independent qualities and sanctity, and it's through her partnership in this family unit, although in a silent sense, concealed, that the bracha comes around. So we have to appreciate and understand that where is the bracha going to come from? Not from all our work and all our toil and all our brilliance in the marketplace, all that, you know, the upfront kind of active partnership and active role. No, Haisha, it's the secret woman who's concealed. He ayotzeret et hasomim minayin. She creates that powerful agency called somim minayin. If a man doesn't know how to respect his wife, if he doesn't appreciate, if he doesn't recognize that she's a complete full partner in his life, in his physical and financial life, in his spiritual life, then he loses the somim minayin. Without that recognition, there's no bracha going to come upon him. And therefore, Rava, when he hears Rabbi Chelbo's presentation, he turns to his Talmidim and he gives them that mandate. And he says, Okiru Neshaichu, respect your wives. Understand that your wife is not just some sort of a handmaid, you know, some sort of maid in the house. She's an Ozeret Bayit, she's an Ezer Kenegdo. But rather, she's a complete Shutafa, a total partner, Kigvil Shel Osios, like the parchment upon which the letters of the Torah. And that's the way he can be zochet to brach in the bayis, by recognizing, respecting, praising, and glorifying his shutafa, his partner, ki hechid this is ashru, so that you'll get a reward. And now, Rabosai, we come back to the parasha that we started with, namely the parasha of Paro. Paro is bestowing upon Avram all these great things, but yet, even if you argue, and as I would argue, that this is a fulfillment of God's divine promise of Eschol Goy Godo Vavarchacha Vagad L'Shmech V'Yibrocha, but why and what merit? Ah, says Rabbi Chalbo, you have to understand, don't look at it as a relationship between Paro and Avram, and that interaction, Paro bestows the gifts upon Avram and makes him wealthy. No, leave out Paro. It's Hativli. Hativli means HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed upon me. But why? And the answer is that you would think that it's Avram who was calling all the shots. He was the one who told Sarai how to do this, and what she should say, and what she should, how she should interact with Paro. And as a result of Avram's great plan, he becomes wealthy. No, the Torah says no. Leave out that. Avram is a recipient. And if you ask me why he merits this great blessing, why does Hashem bestow upon him all this wealth? The answer is Ba'avura. Who recognizes the Ba'avura? It's Avram Avinu. At this moment, when Avram Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, he realizes that if they're going to be successful as a partnership, it's got to be due to the Somim in Ayin element. Who's the Somim in Ayin in this parasha? Why does the Torah completely, what word am I going to look for? Conceal Sarah's role in this parasha. Why does she become secondary? Because the Torah wants to emphasize that it's Avram Avinu who recognizes that this is my Ezer Kenegdo, not in the sense of Ezer as a facilitator, as a machshir, as a secondary, but Ezer Kenegdo, that based on her contribution, on her role as a partner, on her somim in ayin, that's where the bracha is going to come in. Not because of my interaction with Paro. Paro's left out here. It's Yitav Li, because I deserve it. And why do I deserve it? In what merit is Hashem promising me this wealth? It's because of Bavurech, says Rabbi Chalbo. The key to success for anybody on a daily basis is in this one word, Bavurech. The name of this parsha is Bavurech. That's the title we want to give this chapter in the book of books. And why? Because Bavurech means that there's a great partnership of Shtei Yetziros, of two individuals, each having their own personality, their own contribution. And together, with that mutual respect and esteem, they become equal partners. It's l'man yitav li bavurech. So we should learn from this. Number one, the great significance of belief in Hashem, that everything that comes is from Hashem, and if we're zocha, we have to look for a merit. And if we're not zocha, we have to improve our ways and find the merit. And the key of keys to success is the merit of giving kavod to one's wife. Chazal say that a person is machavda Yoser Migufa. The Rambam codifies this in Hilchos Deis, that ethically a person has to give more kavod to his wife than he gives to himself. You know, if I would sell you that, you would tell me, oh, that's a feminist thing, and it's modern and contemporary. Chazal said this 2,000 years ago. It's codified in the poskim. To give kavod to one's wife more than the kavod he gives to himself. Ah, what that means is recognizing that whatever I have comes from her. And that's why Rabbi Akiva, when his Talmidim came, and they sort of pushed his wife out of the way, he said, move away, because the real source of all this bracha, Shali v'shalachem shalahi, it all comes from her. A woman who is willing to sacrifice so much. And that's the name Chava, Eim Kol Chai, the Chiyus, the sacrifice, the role that a woman plays. He rotzen v'shmizocha to be machabed l'man yitav li ba'av urech kein yiratzon.
Maybe we should just test also that of course Sabui, she doesn't have to put on the talis, the filly,
yeah, right,
and double it, the kotel with the big noise.
Right. It's not the noise. You know, right. You're right. It's not the big noise. My father's brother used to always say that those big noises, noisemakers, are the last ones that you can rely upon. They're the last. There were two birds in the tape, my father used to say. Two birds of significance. There's the Orev and there's the Yon. The Orev was very loud. Chazal tell us that the Orev gave a whole dialogue in front of the Teva, protecting the insults, so to speak, of the downtrodden. Who were the downtrodden in the Teva? Who were the second rate people?
Wives.
The Tmeim. Because they only got two each. So the Orev came, because the Orev is a behemoth, is an Oph Tomei, and said, what? I decry this prejudice, what word am I looking for?
Discrimination.
Discrimination against the downtrodden, the underprivileged. Big shot. And who is the Orev? Chazal tell us, the Orev goes out on a mission to find dry land, never comes back. You know where the Orev is busy? Busy devouring dead bodies. Said, quote the Edgar Allan Poe, quote the raven, nevermore. Who's the raven? The raven is the person who has big speeches, full of noise. But when it comes to fulfilling their responsibility vis-a-vis the members of the ark, oh no, the Orev is nowhere to be found. You know where you'll find him? You'll find him as a vulture, literally, attacking the trephus, the dead carcasses that floated to this top after the mob. But the Yonah is quiet. We don't hear much about the Yonah. She's in the background, and she's loyal. First time she goes, she doesn't find dry land. She comes back with an Ali Zayas. Not the Ali Zayas that Arafat Yimach Shmo had when he came to the United Nations. And she goes out a second time. She could have, once she saw dry land, could have decided, I'm hopping this land, call a code of Zacha, you know, send it my Nachla here. She's true and loyal to us. So all these loud, noising people are making rash, you can't rely on that. You rely on the quiet people who are in the behind the scenes, the secret partners, they're the ones that we can rely on.
Scarce.
Just kind of get
yeah, am I in the way?
No, what's up?
Yeah, please, please, this is my...